True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any episodes of the program or breaking updates as we have them. Continue our conversation right now with Scott Roeder, evidence specialist, and with the group Evidence Room LLC. The footprints, the blood, we haven't seen a lot of that disclosed as of yet, but would you assume that there's going to be far more footprints in the house, bloody footprints in the house, in some way, shape, or form, going from room to room or at some place where that could be matched up to a shoe size or something of that nature, other than just the one that was mentioned that I believe was found outside of the home?
I think that there should be. And there's a couple of different ways you can look at it. You can look for blood, bloody shoe stain impressions, or areas that do not have blood in them. Because if you've got an incredibly bloody scene, right, and that's what we expect, and you have an area next to the deceased that has a void of blood, that means there could have been somebody standing there preventing that blood to hit the carpet, right? So even the lack of blood can give you an indication of maybe somebody was standing there and that's why there's no blood there. But then again, if this guy did this, now he was wearing a mask from the accounts of the roommate downstairs. He was most likely wearing gloves, although probably didn't wear gloves when he originally bought the knife, and that's why the DNA was still on it. But he would have access. You can go to any nursing supply store and get little paper booties for your shoes and a hair net for your hair. I mean, those things cost 50 cents a piece. So, you know, if this guy went to the trouble to do what he did, you know, maybe you would expect that he was wearing like little footies and booties and things. I mean, he went to the trouble of wearing a mask and most likely gloves. So, you know, what's to say maybe he didn't wear booties, which would prevent an accurate shoe print analysis because it would obscure the impression on the bottom of the shoe.
Would that also explain the question that many of us have of once the killer left the home, there didn't appear to be a trail of blood outside at all?
Right. Yeah, you would think that maybe he came in with a backpack and he layered up his clothing and brought a pair of booties. And so he commits the killing, takes off the booties on his shoes, pulls down his sweatpants, sweatshirt, throws into his backpack, and leaves without leaving a trace along with him. That's very possible. And if you're going to be planning this, thinking to get away with it like a sociopathic maniac, like most people are thinking this guy is, and honestly, you know, since I'm not involved with this case, I have no problem saying that I like this guy, Brian Kohlberger, as a wannabe serial killer or possibly even a mature serial killer, at least in his mind. I think that's what he was aspirational for. So I wouldn't put it past him to take certain precautions. He certainly was not afraid of being this way if he is guilty, and also having close contact with police. So I find it interesting that, you know, he was definitely trying to be a wolf in sheep's clothing, a do-gooder with the most evil of thoughts in his mind, masking it to the outside, you know, really being a predator. And I think that predator behavior of wanting to get out of there would afford him the ability to plan some preventative measures of being caught, because he clearly didn't want to get caught.
Which is why it's important with some of the evidence items that were revealed, I believe, last week, the Walmart receipt, the Marshall's receipts. Those are going to be very telling of what was purchased, if they reflect booties, if they reflect things like that, that would have been used to cover up potential evidence in his mind based on, you know, what he knew, because obviously he was studying criminology, and one would think he probably planned this a bit to not get caught, maybe not be the best at it, but certainly tried to take some steps. Speaking of that, and being a wolf in sheep's clothing, he did apply to the Pullman police for an internship. He applied, interviewed. There's been some conflicting reports out there about just how far he got. What do we know about that?
Well, I know from personal investigation and through Freedom of Information, there's certain things out there available, because I did hear about that and I wanted to look into it. And so we looked into it, and he did, in fact, interview with the Pullman Police Department on, I have it here, April 12, 2022, and sent an email thanking them for a great meeting. Talking about, this a quote is, Chief Jenkins, it was a great pleasure to meet with you today and share my thoughts and excitement regarding the research assistantship for public safety. I look forward to hearing from you. Best regards, Brian. So it looks like he applied, he was interviewed by the chief, we have no information at this time whether or not he actually got the job or the internship, but certainly he was trying to. And to me, you know, that screams, you know, narcissistic sociopath, who's trying to get close to the people ultimately that would be responsible, maybe not the specific department, but the types of people that ultimately is going to come down and maybe take his life away. And he was trying to cozy up to be one of the good guys there, the ultimate Eddie Haskell, if you will, spy on tactics and procedures and potentially call in favors on his behalf by just the sheer association would score him points for not being an obvious suspect, right? So yeah, it's a pretty sophisticated mentality when you're dealing with somebody who is so narcissistic and sociopathic, and those things go together.
Yeah.
Right. So a sociopath that loves himself and doesn't care that it's wrong and is making conscious efforts to prevent his capture and discovery, put in my mind, Tony, puts this case front and center as a death penalty case, the most heinous crime in American justice, where the government can literally kill you, is murder in the first degree with premeditation, aforethought. And that's what this is shaping up to be. And, we'll see. But I think if I was the prosecutor, that's the area I would be very concerned about developing.
And we don't know at this moment if he, in fact, got that internship. So this part is kind of speculative. And there's been conflicting reports about he got it, he didn't get it. Let's just, for speculation purposes in this area, say he did. Or anyone who would have gotten that internship. What sort of information would he or anyone who would get into that position have access to that essentially could assist someone in committing a crime like this, spying on people, get just things that the average individual wouldn't have?
Well, I want to answer that question into two points. One, and I'll say this one before I forget, is it opens up the police department to extreme criticism and potential legal liability if they let this guy in as an intern and utilized law enforcement resources to essentially help effectuate his own personal crime spree, because that shows bad judgment on any law enforcement that would allow this kind of guy to get through the cracks to get in there, to have access and this is the second part of that answer, to have access to police policies and procedures on how they investigate homicide investigations, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, access to review to review body camera footage of law enforcement interacting potentially with his future victims. It could essentially act as a way of him pacing and looking for a soft target. It wasn't that difficult for one of my citizen sleuths out there. And I'm going to give her a shout out. Lana Oriani with Truth and Transparency is an aggressive citizen sleuth investigator. And she was able to get the body camera footage through Freedom of Information Act of people going to the law enforcement, going to the house and interviewing these girls for noise complaints.
Sure.
Now, this guy would have had access to that kind of stuff, not live, but on a daily basis. He could have logged in and had access to that stuff. That's a crime. I mean, that's a crime in and of itself to use public resources like that. They have the lead system where you can tell, who's being investigated for a crime, who has outstanding warrants. You might have access to information of collateral criminal investigations on people. So you might be able to even target somebody who's already compromised. I don't know. I'm not a criminal, so it's hard to get into the mind of somebody like that. But if this guy was planning it so elaborately, who knows what access of information he could have had, but certainly a lot more access than you would want anybody other than the highest level of person screened with integrity, truth, and dedication to serve the community to have access to that private information on a day-to-day basis. So, I have no dog in the fight. I can't hope one way or the other, but if he did get that internship, I think that opens up the Pullman Police Department to some heavy criticism and possible liability for not, for allowing, such a wolf to get in into the chicken coop, as it were.
No, without a doubt, it's a scary, scary thought, no matter what. We're going to continue to dive into this conversation a little bit later in the day. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that part of the conversation as we get to it. In just a bit here on the podcast. You can follow us wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes. Get commercial-free episodes if you would like. That you can do through Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to follow me, you can go to Twitter. I'm at Tony B Pod. My name is Tony Bruschi. Until next time, for all of us at True Crime Today, thanks for listening.